You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
It's the third and final hour of tonight's live broadcast, Saturday, September 6th of the Political Cesspool radio program. James Edwards and Keith Alexander live and in the studio tonight. We've covered a lot of news so far, a lot of different stories. We've got that many more stories to cover this last hour, including one just telephoned in by a listener. Before we get to that, Keith's going to wrap up with a nice pretty bow, the story he was talking about in the previous segment to take us into the break of the second hour. And it pertains to a bumper sticker you saw, Keith, and this goes into the so-called Battle of the Sexes, I guess, turning boys into girls and girls into boys.
Yes, one of the more prevalent bumper stickers that you see on the bumpers of liberals, or in fact, they have them plastered all over their cars typically. If you see a car plastered up with slogans and bumper stickers, 9 out of 10 times it's going to be a liberal's car. And also, I'd say at least 7 out of 10 times it's going to be a woman's car, okay, a liberal woman's car. And one of the things that I always see is, well-behaved women rarely make history. Have you ever seen that one, James?
Yes, I have.
Well, guess what? Well-behaved men rarely make history either. And what the left is trying to do through the use of psychotropic drugs in youngsters is to turn men and women from being cooperative with clearly defined sexual roles into competitors with one another. And by the use of psychotropic drugs, they're trying to suppress the competitive instincts of males, and by the means of such government programs as Title IX, Gender Equity in Sports, they're trying to hone and enhance the competitive instincts of females. And one of the casualties of this is the white birth rate. Let me just leave it with that, James. Let everybody think about that. We've been talking about the movie Tammy and the Bachelor here recently. If you want to see the proper relationship between a man and a woman, a husband and a wife, that movie is, you know, probably the best primer that you could have to tell you what the old world used to be like, and boy, have we lost something great.
Well, I'll tell you something that we've gained, though, Keith, is political correctness and cultural Marxism absolutely run amok. And we had a telephone call from a listener during the last commercial break, our extended break, and it pertains to a story that we covered at the top of the show with the death of this young white woman in the Target parking lot at the hands of a drugged up, you know, black male. But this story is 1,400 times worse. Now, how could it be 1,400 times worse? Well, the British police, this story I'm reading out of Forbes magazine, the British police have ignored the fact that Pakistani gangs, now this is what Paul Weston was talking about our culture being genocided, our people being genocided literally and figuratively. Pakistani gangs have abused more than 1,400 girls, white girls, in the British community of Rotherham. Political correctness is the culprit. I want you to get a load of this story. A story of rampant child abuse, ignored and abetted by the police. And this is according to Forbes, folks. So a mainstream source, if you will, an establishment source. This story emerging out of the British town of Rotherham. Until now, its scope and scale would have been inconceivable in a civilized country. Its origins, however, lie in something quite ordinary. What one Labour member of Parliament called not wanting to rock the multicultural community boat. And what's been going on here, Keith, is that there have been 1,400 reported cases of very young girls, underage girls, in most accounts, being raped and kidnapped and had sexual abuse at the hands of Pakistani Muslims. Social workers tell the girls they cannot help them. The police refuse to get involved. Sociologists convince the government that the police are racist if they if they show any interest in this case, and the only way that they would show interest in this case is because they are racist against the Pakistani sexual predators, to take the side of the victimized white girl shows their racial prejudice. They are more concerned with political correctness than crime. And no one is going to be fired over this. Now, I'm basically breaking down the Forbes story with subtitles and subheadings, but this is what's going on. 1,400 young white girls in Great Britain, indigenous, native British girls, raped and had all sorts of evil bestowed upon them by multiculturalism and diversity, by these Pakistani Muslims. It's well known. It's documented. 1,400 cases have been reported. No one's been arrested. No one's going to be fired. And they say if the police do show an interest in this, it's only because they're racist and taking the sides of the white over the Pakistanis. I mean, Keith, this is this. You want to know what cultural genocide is? This is it.
Well, you know, this produces an interesting conundrum for the left, because two of their victim groups, women and then minorities, non-white minorities, have interests that now come into conflict. Now, for example, feminists are responsible for the passage of many domestic violence laws, the establishment of special domestic violence courts in many communities in the United States. And what one of the unintended consequences of all of this is that, you know, they have the Violence Against Women's Act, which gives money to local law enforcement agencies in the United States. The federal government gives money to local law enforcement agencies, basically encouraging them to get prosecutions and guilty pleas or guilty verdicts against male sexual predators. And on behalf of female victims. Well, unfortunately for the left, they are embarrassed that they find that the vast majority of these males that are caught in this dragnet tend to be minority males, like these Pakistani males, for example, in England. In the United States, probably 70% of the men or males that wind up running afoul of these domestic violence laws tend to be minority group men, either blacks or Hispanics, typically, in the United States of America. Now, how does the leftist news media deal with this? They don't report the race of the perpetrators. They just report the crime. We had a big to-do in the Memphis paper this past week about a black woman who was shot and killed outside a daycare center by her serially abusive significant other slash husband, okay? He'd been a husband. He had been abusive to her when they were not married. He was just as abusive when they got married, just as controlling and whatnot. But if you didn't see the pictures, you would think that you were reading about someone other, that the race wouldn't be important.
We're going to take a break, Keith, and we're going to come back and talk a little more about this. And I want to thank that listener who brought this back to my attention. It had been emailed to me a couple of times before, and I appreciate him reminding me of it so that we could work it into the show tonight. We're going to talk more about it on the other side of this break.
This is big!
Not just big, it's the Freeze-Dry Guys Giant Factory Authorized Sale. This month, save 30 to 45% off on number 10 cans of high-quality Mountain House freeze-dried foods from the Freeze-Dry Guy. Factory fresh stock just arrived, so now's the time to stock up with the finest, best-tasting, longest-proven shelf-life foods in the industry at giant savings of 30 to 45% off. But hurry, supplies are limited to only the stock we have on hand. Call 866-404-3663. Free shipping to the lower 48 states. Click freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com. Hurry, the Giant Factory authorized Mountain House sale is going on now, only from the Freeze Dry Guy. The finest freeze-dried and dehydrated foods available anywhere for long-term storage.
Many of you have heard me talk about my Vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this Vigor stuff about? Well, Vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called Vigor. Would you like to improve your Vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the Vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211. And take your free Vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again. And, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com or 801-669-2211 for your free Vigor score test today.
We fought. We learned. We struggled. We won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
This story that we were talking about before the last break of the rape, the raping of over 1,400 young white girls in Great Britain at the hand of Pakistani Muslim gangs, and the way it's been treated over there by the media, by the police, by sociologists, and so on and so forth, it's beyond contemptible. It's beyond atrocious. It's just horrible. And but because the victims are white and the perpetrators are non-white, it gets an entirely different treatment than the death of one thug, Michael Brown, in Ferguson, Missouri, that the media just salivates over. Now, I'm sorry he died, but he wouldn't have died if apparently he had behaved. But on the other hand, you have innocent young girls over here that don't have the choice of whether or not to behave. They're getting raped because they're young white women. And the corrupt, white-hating, self-loathing government of the United Kingdom couldn't care less. You know, if you could imagine, this would never happen in real life, but if you could imagine white people exclusively raping 1,400 non-white girls in a single town, folks. This wasn't even a countrywide phenomenon. This was a single small community in the United Kingdom, in Great Britain. Do you think you would have heard about it? Do you think it would have been in the media a little more than this story has been? Well, of course, the answer is readily apparent. This all goes back to cultural Marxism. We're talking about cultural genocide, white genocide, cultural Marxism. It all works hand in hand. And we have new listeners, Keith, of course, to this show each and every week. Every week we welcome a new and growing audience. So you may ask, well, what is this cultural Marxism? I've heard you use the term. Well, we put up a definition of it this week that's quite good. Cultural Marxism is an offshoot of Marxism that gave birth to political correctness, multiculturalism. Unlike traditional Marxism that focuses on economics, cultural Marxism focuses on culture and maintains that all human behavior is a result of culture, not heredity or race, and thus is able to be formed. Cultural Marxists deny the biological reality of race and argue that race is a social construct. Nevertheless, cultural Marxists support the race-based identity politics of non-whites, and exclusively of non-whites. Cultural Marxists typically support race-based affirmative action The proposition state, as opposed to a nation rooted in common ancestry, elevating non-Western religions above Western religions, speech codes and censorship, multiculturalism, diversity training, and anti-white education curricula, maladaptive sexual norms and anti-male feminism, the dispossession of white people, and mass third world immigration into Western countries. That is what the cultural Marxists support. They have also promoted the idea that white people, instead of birthing white babies, should interracially marry or adopt non-white children. Samuel P. Huntington maintained that cultural Marxism is an anti-white ideology. Cultural Marxists, in conclusion, have taken over the institutions, as we have pointed out for so many years on the political cesspool, of media, education, mainstream Christianity, law, and finance. Their goal is the annihilation of Western civilization. Kevin McDonald has a quote here, and this really, when you pare it down as finely as you can, this is what we're all about here on the political cesspool. And Kevin McDonald, our good friend Dr. McDonald, has put it very succinctly when he writes that all people have ethnic interests and all people have a legitimate right to assert their interests, to construct societies that reflect their culture, and to define the borders of their kinship group. Now, if everyone did that and played by those rules, we could respect different cultures. We would respect them from afar, because when you put them in the same living space, what you get is what you see in Bryant, Arkansas, and what you see in Rotherham,
England.
This is what happens when multiculturalism is forced.
Well, you know, the history of Europe in the 20th century is a paradigm on this. Basically, when different ethnic and racial groups were allowed to divide and have their own nations, only then have we had a period of prolonged peace in Europe. When you had these large heterogeneous population nations like Yugoslavia or the Austro-Hungarian Empire, what you would find was that you had a constant conflict. Diversity brings conflict. Diversity is not our greatest strength, it's our greatest weakness, and we believe that. Now, here is, let me make this comment about cultural Marxism. Cultural Marxism is not just a convenient description for something that has obviously occurred in America and in Europe over the past century. It actually was a movement. It was started at the Frankfurt School in the University of Frankfurt in Germany in 1923. Its leading lights tended to be Jewish intellectuals, Theodor Adorno, George Lukács, Max Horkheimer, and others, Eric Fromm, Herbert Marcuse. These people concluded, and Leon Trotsky, who was a typical communist, not a Soviet communist, not a cultural Marxist, came to the same conclusion at about the same time in the 1930s. And his conclusion was, and the conclusion of the cultural Marxists were, that the true dividing line in human society was not as Marx and Engels had envisioned it to be, which is economic status. It's not a matter of the capitalist class versus the capitalist class wannabes, bourgeoisie, and then the proletariat, the overwhelmed and underpowered mass of people. Economic status wasn't the great dividing line. Religion wasn't the greatest dividing line. The great dividing line in humanity upon which a revolution could be built was race. You can't buy off racial animosities. What Trotsky said is that the bourgeoisie, the white working class, was not, not the bourgeoisie, but the white working class, the proletariat, were totally unsuited for their historic role in Marxist ideology to be the proletariat, which is more than a description of a class of people. They're supposed to be the spear point of the revolution. He said that all you have to do is increase their access to goods and services a bit, and they abandon the revolution and become good little bourgeoisie members. On the other hand, you can't do that with any racial group like blacks or like Hispanics. Their animus against the white race is enduring, pure, and true. And that's what you need to focus on if you want to have a successful Marxist revolution. And that is what distinguishes cultural Marxism from standard Leninist, Marx and Engels teachings and whatnot. It's a variation on a theme, and where old Leninist and Stalinist and Trotskyite communism has gone to the dust heap of history, cultural Marxism is alive, well, thriving, and conquering new nations and fields of endeavor day by day, James.
Keith, what more can be added to that? And it's important to have an understanding of what you're talking about, rather than just throwing out terms and with reckless abandon. And I'm not saying that anyone in this audience does that, but it's always good to be rooted in the things that you're going out there and advocating for or against, and to have a good understanding, right, left, and center of the topic. And so to get back to just definitions from time to time is something that we should do. Now, when we come back from this next commercial break, we're going to tell you about a happening that went down a few days ago at Joel Osteen's church in Houston, Texas, which, as was written at the Occidental Dissent website this week, houses the largest congregation of Americanity in the United States. We can't even call it Christianity even more if this is what passes for the faith. We're going to talk about it right after this.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
The Occidental Quarterly fills a unique niche in bringing together scholarly articles on a wide range of topics that are mired in political correctness elsewhere. It is edited by Professor Kevin McDonald, who's no stranger to listeners of the Political Cesspool. There are quite a few reasons for the precarious state of our civilization and our people, but one of the main ones is that we have lost the intellectual and moral high ground to a cultural elite that is hostile to our people and our culture. Those of us who are politically aware must understand that the elites dominating culture and the political process in the West are intellectually and morally bankrupt. TOQ is the key. Digital download subscriptions are only $30 a year. Subscriptions by first-class mail are only $60 a year. Go to TOQOnline.com and click on Subscribe Now. In addition to receiving fascinating and informative articles, you will also be supporting the work of scholars who are part of a community defending our people and our culture with the highest level of integrity and intellectual sophistication. That's TOQOnline.com. Subscribe now.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support.
go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, so we're going to bring you a story now from a so-called church, the Lakewood Church in Houston, Texas, led by Joel Osteen. And, you know, when we bring these stories to your attention, it's not because we're bashing Christianity. I mean, certainly we are Christians here. We are proud of that. We don't mince words about that. We are defenders of the faith, and we use this program to defend and advance the faith of our fathers.
But what we are, and let me add this, we're Orthodox Christians. That doesn't mean that we belong to one of the so-called churches that has Orthodox in its name, but we believe in Christian virtues and Christian teaching as it has traditionally been understood, not this new groovy independent church vibe that, for example, Joel Osteen represents.
Well, and he may fill a basketball arena every Sunday morning, and indeed he does, but you'll almost never hear Joel Osteen mention the name of Jesus Christ specifically. He'll talk about God a lot, generically. He won't mention judgment, sin, or repentance. It's all sugary, feel-good nonsense masquerading as Christianity. And every now and then, I mean, certainly he'll say things with which we can find agreement, but I want to play this clip. And this is his wife leading the congregation, which I, as a traditional Christian, have a problem.
Obviously not biblical.
I love women. I mean, we talk about how great women are and the attributes that they have that we certainly need. They are, you know, Adam's rib and this, that, and the other, but they shouldn't be pastoring churches. And let's listen to what Victoria Osteen says with Joel by her side in one of the recent sermons there at the church. If we can cue that up, I didn't pass that along that we'd be playing that clip, but it is the Victoria Osteen clip. If we can play that right now, that'd be great. Well, I guess we'll get to it in just a second, but I do want to read this quick verse from Matthew. Beware of false prophets, which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. You shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth fruit of evil. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth
good fruit. Therefore, by their fruits you shall know.
There you go. And so basically what you have here is this woman leading the congregation saying that you don't come to church to worship God. You come here to worship yourself. And that's what God takes joy in, is when you make yourself happy. And then
breaking down
the argument here. We'll play this clip in a moment when we get it queued up. But Keith, take it from there while we wait on
Well, you know, that is the antithesis of Christian training, okay? If you are a Christian, if you are a fundamentalist Christian, you focus on Jesus. If you are like a mainline or Roman Catholic Christian, you focus on the triune God, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. You pray either through Jesus or through the triune God. Now, humanism, which is the antithesis of Christianity, says that human beings are the be-all and end-all, and that God only exists in the imagination of men. That was what Feuerbach, the 19th century thinker, contributed to the humanist lexicon. But having a church say things like this, you know, basically it's incredible that Christians have had their natural immune system for heresy so disabled that they don't see this for the rank heresy that it is.
Well, and that was said, and we don't know the reaction from the crowd there because the clip was cut off before the crowd could react, but I imagine it was mostly cheers. I mean, if they've been going to that church regularly, it's not the first time they've heard something like this, although I don't know if they've heard something quite this blasphemous. But and it's not just this. I mean, in all denominations, now not in all of them, but in most of the bigger ones, you have a tolerance now for a lot of sin, including homosexuality. You've got a lot of churches now, very mainstream Protestant denominations, putting in homosexual bishops and clergy and acting as though that that's not a sin. I mean, it's cafeteria Christianity. They pick and choose what they want. They discard the rest. And then now you've got this stuff that, you know, you, well, it's on our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. You can watch it for yourself and listen to it for yourself. But we basically broke down exactly what was said there.
And see, you can't approve what God condemns. You can't condemn what God approves. And God doesn't mention homosexuality without condemning it. Furthermore, you know, homosexuality isn't a sin in today's Church of What's Happening Now, Baby, to use Flip Wilson's term from the 60s. But racism is the foulest of all sins, but you will search in vain in the Bible for any condemnation of so-called racism. Racism is supposed to be rooted in slavery, James. What does the Bible have to say about slavery? Slavery is mentioned often. Whenever you hear talk of a servant in the Bible, you're talking about a slave. And what does the Bible say? Does it condemn slavery and slave owning? No, it says, slaves, obey your masters. Masters, be kind to your slaves. So consequently, there may be other reasons for not approving of slavery, and we certainly don't approve of slavery, but on the other hand, elevating it to the greatest of all sins is totally unbiblical.
And now you have churches that are diminishing the sin of homosexuality or just dismissing it altogether. And what does the Bible say about homosexuality? You mentioned what it says about slavery, which is according to modern day churches.
A man shall not sleep with another man as with a woman, or a woman with another man, a woman with another woman as with a man. It is an abomination in my eyes, saith the Lord.
And so, and they, you know, completely, I say they, I mean, my beleaguered Southern Baptists will still hold the line for now on homosexuality. They've surrendered most others. But
they certainly don't want to focus on that now because that's just not groovy. Have you ever noticed, again, in the communist appeal, our affectionate name for the commercial appeal, our local fish wrap, whenever they have a religious roundtable, they decide who are the spokesmen for Christianity, and they're always liberals. They have a guy named Ron McDonald who has a congregation of about 25 who's a Quaker and a lived-out individual. He's always quoted. Steve Gaines, who is the pastor of Bellevue Baptist Church, the largest Southern Baptist congregation in the world, he rarely appears because what he says too often offends the canons of political correctness.
Well, folks, we're going to take a quick call. John in California. John, you're on with James and Keith.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Doing well, John. Thank you for calling.
Good. Listen, Mr. Alexander, I've listened to you here. Both Rush Limbaugh and Bill O'Reilly have proclaimed on their shows publicly that pedophilia is a greater evil than racism could ever hope to be. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Well, I do, but then he's supposed to be conservative. If you go to one of these mainline churches in Memphis and elsewhere, racism is supposed to be the greatest of all sins. Pedophilia is, again, condemned by the Bible. What does it say? It'd be better for you to have a millstone tied around your neck and thrown off a boat in the deepest part of the sea rather than to harm one of these.
And it's interesting about the racism or what passes for racism being such a sin and being condemned by the Bible, because racism wasn't even a term until 100 years ago or therefore. John, what else do you have?
Well, you were also talking about George Lukacs when you were mentioning Horkheimer and Marcuse and the rest of those characters. And yeah. Pat Buchanan had Lukacs in his book, Death of the West.
Yes.
I don't know if you know this or not. George Lukacs, and I've tried to analyze or offer you an analogy in this. George Lukacs was the man as the Minister of Culture after World War I in the Balakun regime in Hungary that first took the adult level of sex and put it into the public school classrooms in the first and second graders. And this is the thing that I tried to yes.
No, I was going to say yes, and the Balakun government lasted for about 6 months because the Hungarian people were so horrified by things like the addition of sex education to the school system, that they cooperated with Romanian invaders in overthrowing the Belacoon or Belacoan government.
Right. I agree with you 100% there. But the principle that I'm trying to explain to you is that the adult level issue of sex and or race, whereas in Brown, Earl Warren used race instead of sex. The first thing you ever see about a person when you first meet them by natural law is to remember when you recall their image, race and sex. So Warren, what he did was instead of sex, he took race and forced it into the classroom. And the first and second graders, he extracted that issue from Sweet versus Painter, an adult level law school, and McLaren versus Oklahoma State Regents, a white graduate school. Race and sex are adult level issues, and they're being forced on the kids in the first, second, and third grade. The inability for a child to fully comprehend an adult-level issue is evidence of an undeveloped psychological mind.
Hey, John, thank you so much for the incredible comments. We got to take a break, but thank you for injecting that into the discussion tonight. Very good work.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Break the bond of Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829, or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
So I just want to encourage every one of us to realize when we obey God, we're not doing it for God. I mean, that's one way to look at it. We're doing it for ourselves. Because God takes pleasure when we're happy. That's the thing that gives Him the greatest joy this morning. So I want you to know this morning, just do good for your own self. Do good because God wants you to be happy. when you come to church, when you worship him, you're not doing it for God, really. You're doing it for yourself, because that's what makes God happy. Amen.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Well, there you have it, folks. That was the Victoria Osteen comments that we were referencing in the last segment. But I want to transition quickly into another commentary by Paul Weston, who we featured during the first hour, talking about cultural genocide and white genocide being explained. And he has this now, a seven-minute long audio. It's entitled, "My Name is Paul Weston, and I Am a Racist." And before you rush to judgment, listen to what he has to say. It's one of the best things I've ever heard, ever. And it basically takes 10 years of what we've been trying to get across on the radio airwaves, and it's condensed into 7 minutes, and you'll want to take this and commit it to heart. Let's listen to it.
Hello, my name is Paul Weston, and I am a racist. I know I'm a racist because I'm told I'm a racist by a great deal of people. The hard left think I'm a racist. The Labour Party thinks I'm a racist. Conservatives think I'm a racist. Liberal Democrats think I'm a racist. The BBC thinks I'm a racist, so I must therefore be a racist. Why am I a racist? It's very simple. I wish to preserve the culture of my country. I wish to preserve the people of my country. And in doing so, that makes me a designated racist in today's society. Now, this is something that's been moved by the left. The goalposts have been moved by the left a considerable distance on this. In order to be termed a racist 30 or 40 years ago, you had to actively dislike foreign people. Now, I don't dislike foreign people. What I do like, what I love, is my country, my culture, and my people. And I see that under a terrible threat at the moment. Britain is a very small country that's opened its doors to the mass immigrants of the third world, and we are simply being overwhelmed. Our schools can't cope. Our hospitals can't cope. Very little can cope anymore. Our welfare system is on the verge of buckling as well. So if I want to defend what I grew up in, what I was born into, my country, my British culture, my heritage and my history, I am, apparently, according to absolutely everybody today, a racist. But I don't think that's the case. Not the case that I'm not actually a racist. I'm going to admit that full out right now, because clearly I am. I've been told by so many people I am, it simply must be true. I'm probably also an Islamophobe. A phobia is an irrational fear of something. Now, I don't have an irrational fear of Islam. I look around the world today, at Syria at the moment, where almost 100,000 people have been killed in the last 2 years, where Shia Muslims are slaughtering Sunni Muslims and vice versa. I look at places like Indonesia and Egypt and China and the Philippines. Everywhere you look, you see problems with Islam, and they're violent. They are, dare I say it, to really reinforce my racist credentials, a thoroughly savage political and religious ideology. Now, many people will disagree with that. The far left, of course, will say you cannot criticize Islam because Islam is a religion and rules have now been put into place in this country that say if you criticize it, you are guilty of inciting religious hatred. That Islam is not just a religion. Islam is a political ideology as well, and we need to call it out on the fact that it is also political. It is a culture that is both political and religious. And I would like to know if I'm able to say certain things about it. Do I think, for example, that stoning adulteresses to death is something that we should welcome in this country? Well, I don't think it is, so therefore I'm guilty of religious hatred by saying it. Do I think homosexuals should be hanged from cranes? No, I don't. I think it's backward. I think it's savage. And I think the people that do it are beyond the pale, quite frankly. And I'm not allowed to say these things because, of course, I'm again inciting religious hatred. So not only am I a racist, I'm also a religionist, apparently. But I'm not. You know, we have a huge problem in this country that is not going to go away. It's going to get worse and worse and worse. We as a people are declining as a demographic, and the Islamic population is growing 9 times faster than any other. And when I look to the future, I see a full-blown religious civil war occurring in this country. The unthinkable things that are going on in somewhere like Syria today will happen in this country before 2040, certainly before 2050. And I don't want Britain to turn into a country like that. So I'm going to denounce Islam as a backward, savage, political and religious ideology, and to hell with what anybody thinks about that. Because if we don't do something about it, we are going to be involved in something that most people can barely even begin to imagine in Britain. Babies are beheaded in towns in Syria. The idea this could happen in somewhere like Surbiton or even Eaton Square is simply impossible to think for most people, but it is going to happen. It really is going to happen. So we need to denounce it for what it is, and we need to start mounting some sort of defense against this. But the trouble with mounting a defense against it is that you get hit with the racist accusation. I'm not a racist, but. Well, here's the thing, I am a racist. If I want to avoid a civil war happening in my country, I am prepared to accept being called a racist. And you should be prepared to accept being called a racist as well. Let's all just say, yes, we're dreadful, dreadful racists, and let's start denouncing an ideology that is the most primitive, backward, savage ideology that we've willfully imported into this country by the left, by people like Tony Blair, who did it deliberately in order to undermine our culture, our people, our country, my country. They did it deliberately. And then they said, you're not allowed to actually argue with us about this. Well, I'm arguing with you about this, Mr. Blair, and I'll tell you something. You denounced, you repealed the treason law shortly after you came into power. I think you committed treason, Mr. Blair. I think you committed treason when you said we are going to import the third world in order to rub the noses of the right in diversity. To me, that's treason. Your principal duty is to uphold the best interests of the people of this country. The idea that you deliberately set out to undermine us and to subvert us is an act that's criminal. It doesn't matter that you repealed the laws. Those laws can be brought back. And one day, Mr. Blair, you will be tried for treason, along with the rest of your cabinet and every single high-ranking Labour politician that allowed this criminal act to happen. And I'm going to tell you this. It doesn't matter that you can perhaps prosecute me for racism or inciting religious hatred. I don't believe in that. I believe only in one thing, the defense of my country, the defense of my people, the defense of my culture. And everything else can just go to hell. I am a racist.
If more people start standing up and speaking out in a sensible way, like Paul Weston, then solutions could present themselves once more. You didn't hear him mention the 800-pound Jewish gorilla in the room, the Jewish control of the media here in the United States as well as in Europe. But he was quite right to criticize the Muslim and the religion of Islam. We are not in such close proximity to it here in America as they are in Europe, but it is a very big problem. The raping of those 1,400 girls in Rotherham, England, the rape of all the Swedish women. It's a very big problem over there for Europeans, and he is right to spend a lot of time talking about it. I want to remind you before I give Keith Alexander the final word that the Political Cesspool's third quarter fundraising drive, very crucial month for us, folks. We have to have these quarterly fundraising appeals to bring enough into the storehouse to keep this program going. If you appreciate the work that we do and the stellar production that we have each and every Saturday night, remember to leave a little something in the tip jar to keep it going. We are an entirely listener-supported show. We have some incentives for you at thepoliticalcesspool.org where you can donate safely and securely tonight. Keith, 30 seconds, last word to you and Paul Weston's response to Paul Weston's comment.
Okay, why is Paul Weston focused on Islam and Muslims? He's focused on them because the left is using the same strategy there that they use in America. They find the closest group of third worlders in the closest proximity to the lands that they want to convert, and they open the floodgates. In America, that third world population is Hispanic. We don't have a lot of Muslims around here, okay? But on the other hand, in Europe, it's Islam from the Maghreb and elsewhere. We'll talk to you later about this. Have a great week.
Good night, everybody. We love you. God bless you. For my staff and crew, I'm James Edwards, and I'll see you next Saturday night right here in the Political Cesspool.